Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Torre, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Sanjay, how was your weekend?
It's very relaxing. Did nothing at all.
Nothing at all. Well, that's always a change for you.
Yes.
You were usually, and this weekend I made travel plans.
Oh, really? Where'd you go?
I didn't go anywhere. I made travel plans.
Because, oh, sorry.
You know, in a couple weeks we'll be broadcasting from FinTech South,
right?
You know, at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah.
Again, on the field.
That's so exciting.
And then immediately after that, we are on a plane to Phoenix, Arizona to be broadcasting at the Conscious Capitalism event there. That's their national conference.
Big plans.
You excited about that?
I am excited.
But nothing is as exciting as what we're going to be doing here today. We got a motley crew today, don't we?
Full house.
Full house. All right. We're going to kick it off with an old friend, Brian Peters with Citizens Bank. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Lee. Good to see you again.
And so what's happening at Citizens Bank? You guys have been pretty busy.
We've been very busy. We continue to grow. As you and I talked the last 2 years since I've been here at Citizens, and I've come over here a couple times on your show, I was employee number 8 2.5 years ago. And now we've grown to over 30 people here in the Atlanta office, expect to be up over 40 by the end of the year. We've doubled the office space. We've actually made some acquisitions, including one right here in Atlanta with a company called Bowstring Advisors. We continue to expand all throughout the Southeast. We've got well over 50 people in Charlotte. You know, there were 40-some-odd people at Bowstring. We've got people in Florida, people in Texas. We just continue to grow rapidly and build our business here in the South.
So now tell us about your business. What do you specialize in?
Well, we primarily concentrate on large corporations and anything and everything that those companies could utilize a bank for. So companies are usually over $100 million in revenue, but that's not a given. We've got some that are smaller than that. Raise capital for them, either in the bank market or in the capital markets. Raise public and private debt. We can raise equity as well. Advise on acquisitions. And then we do a lot of business in the payments world, which is one of my partners here is sitting here with us in the studio. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second.
So now, are you guys going to go to FinTech South? Are you going to show up there?
We will be at FinTech South. That's correct. So hopefully I'll step onto the stage with you at that point.
Well, we are booking interviews. Last time, I think we did 20 to 30 interviews that day that we were there. So that's a great event. Now, how important is payment to you guys?
Payments are extremely important. As you know, it's a center stone of our economy, and not just here in the U.S., but throughout the world. And we've got a big payments business at Citizens, lots of different clients, and one of the clients is here. We're always looking to stay on the forefront of the payments world. I spent early part of my career being an investment banker in the payments business and building a business at my previous shop. We are building the same thing here. We've got a number of clients, in the payments business that are right here in Atlanta. Atlanta being a big payments hub, and one of our clients is Priority Payments, and John Priority is here with us, and we are looking at building other businesses in the payments world, and just you can either grow it organically, you can partner with companies like Priority, or you can make acquisitions like we did with Bowstring, which is an M&A firm. But in this case, we partner with Priority, and they are a client as well as a partner in the payments world.
All right, so let's bring John on. Welcome, John.
Oh, thank you, Lee.
Now, tell us about Priority. How are you serving folks?
Priority 13 years ago was a startup company, a credit card processor. You fast forward to where we are today, we have over 600 employees based in Alpharetta, Georgia. When we started, we were processing credit and debit cards with an institutional framework to grow. And companies, banks, financial institutions like Citizens gave us that opportunity as a sponsor bank way back when, those type of opportunities. And today we service 185,000 small to mid-size merchants on the credit side. That's $40 billion in processing. And the sixth largest, what we call non-bank processors. In addition to that, we formed a commercial payments division. And that's, you look at more institutional partnerships where you're moving large institutional companies off of paper check and paper invoice onto an electronification process. So automated payables is the term that's used. And again, Citizens has been a great partner in that regard as well.
Well, why don't you educate the listeners a little bit about what makes Atlanta kind of unique in the fintech world and why a lot of payment companies are based here?
You know, Brian touched on it. It's become the payments hub, the financial transaction, financial technology hub in the United States. And I think it started with some of the large financial institutions, and your First Data is Global Payments, what was Nova Information Systems, now Elavon. It started with those three, along with TSYS down in Columbus, and it's really expanded from there. So the to say that it's a target-rich environment is a very true statement, particularly when you're hiring the different department heads and employees that you need.
Now, from a talent standpoint, how well do you guys work with the different universities here to kind of grow your own talent and help maybe influence some of the curriculum so that you're getting the person out there? See how important it was for you guys to be across from each other? It's all coming together now, isn't it?
Go ahead, John.
I'll start, Brian. Yes, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, UGA, Kennesaw, we recruit actively from all of those and others. Gwinnett Tech, I mean, I could go on and on. There's just, like I said, a significant talent pool. For us, it's important that our work environment is, let's call it, millennial-friendly. And we've positioned it that way and continue to grow it. But one of our employees will reference that we hire graduates to grandparents. So it's everywhere in between.
So now, is there any challenges in dealing with the multi-generation in the workforce?
There's always challenges with that. I mean, it's I'm one of the elder generation workforce, but we know we're actively recruiting people, you know, all up and down the spectrum, and we are actively recruiting, like John is, at some of the major schools here in the area. We just hired someone from the University of Texas and joined us here in Atlanta, so that was a nice win for us. But we're also hiring, I've hired a couple of people this past 2 years that are over 60 that, bring tremendous amount of expertise that that they can, help, not only immediately with, bringing on new clients, but also help elevate the new recruits out of college to help, give them experience.
Well, Brian, talk about how your relationship with Priority kind of evolved.
Sure.
They started out as... They were a client?
They started out as a client. That's right. And they're still a client, a very good client. Yeah. So thank you, John. Mm-hmm. But they're also, as John started talking about, the corporate side and what companies do to make their payments, they would, typically send either, one file or numerous files to pay in all manner of ways, ACH, wire, check. John, help me out. I'm missing,
Virtual card. Virtual card. Dynamic discounting. So right. Early pay discounting right. Programs.
Yeah. So when a company, a large company would, send their payments, they might be sending them to, five or six different banks, several different processors, and we're trying to educate companies on more efficient ways of doing that. And obviously electronic is much more efficient than paper, but there are ways of doing it electronically that are cheaper than other ways electronically.
What percentage are still using paper?
Oh, you know that answer, John? I don't.
Is it?
In terms of check, it's between 50% and 80% still check.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's very, very large. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
But that's stunning.
Yeah.
You're also referring to a multi-trillion dollar industry.
Right.
And check is probably the riskiest way to pay. So if you can convince anybody to convert from check to an electronic means, the ability to control your fraud and other issues are enhanced tremendously when you go to electronically.
And then, so that's part of your value to them is you're trying to educate them and make it as smooth as possible to make that transition?
That's right. And, face it, all of us tend to get in our comfort zone and don't want to make changes because changes many times can seem to be painful.
Right.
Once you convince somebody to make that change and you go through the initial pain point of conversion, afterwards they're typically so happy that
they're like, why didn't we do this 5 years
exactly
ago?
Right.
Many efficiencies, as Brian mentioned, the one that's paramount is the speed of pay. So many of the clients get paid faster. It's a more secure payment process, And the efficiencies that come along with it, you know, they bear themselves out, as you mentioned, that once it's done, they look back and say these traditional methods, they're very happy they made the change.
So now, but how did that transition go from, okay, they're just our client, and now we're going to kind of work together in a deeper manner? Who raises their hand to say, hey, you know what, there may be more opportunity here that we're not taking advantage of?
Well, from a bank standpoint, we're constantly looking at, does it make more sense for us to build it internally or to, you know, find a partner? Mm-hmm. And typically our you know, fintech partners are much, much better than any bank of developing, you know, the...
Because this is all they're thinking
that's
about.
That's exactly right. They're thinking about it day in and day out. So, you know, at that point, it's, you know, you look at how much it would cost to build it, and almost always it makes more sense to, you know, to partner with somebody.
And you're a math guy, right?
I am a math guy. You're right.
This is,
it's just math,
right?
It's simple math.
So now, John, when they approach you to kind of deepen the relationship, how did that go over at your shop?
Extremely well. We started with Citizens Bank as a sponsor bank on what we call merchant core acquiring, and expanded into the commercial payments that we've just spoke of in terms of different ways to pay an electronic file. You know, Citizens had really, you know, an open book for us to give us opportunity throughout the United States. And, you know, they've been a great partner, and we look at ways to continue to grow it, you know, throughout our Alpharetta facility here.
So now that opened up a new type of client for you, or it just gave you access to more clients?
Yeah, both. The difference in client on the merchant processing side, you're talking about a small to mid-sized merchant. It could be, you know, dry cleaner, retail, restaurant, lodging property. When you look about the that's a consumer, right? Consumer client. When you look at the commercial client, it's very much an institutional partner, like a Home Depot, a Delta, Costco, insurance companies, hospital groups. So again, larger institutional relationships that Citizens will have and give us an opportunity to work with.
Do you work in the e-commerce?
We do. We do. Yeah, we've probably, I'm going to say 20-25% of our volume is e-commerce, so, and growing, continuing to grow.
So now, okay, once you make this, you put this kind of relationship in place like this and it's all working, how often do you kind of revisit it and tweak it and kind of, you know, look for more and more opportunities?
I would say it's just constant. I mean, we you know, I think you probably look at Citizens as, you know, we have a sales force for you that's out there, you know, constantly calling on companies to try to convince them to do payments through Citizens, which means engaging Priority. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're in constant communication. And then we're also, you know, Priority's access to, you know, to the Fed and processing, you know, the payments with the merchant card. And so they're constantly working with our product team to improve service, to improve capabilities, and you know, just, you know, basically drive more revenues for both of us.
Now, are either of you or both of you kind of dabbling in blockchain?
Well, that's a great question. So I'd say the short answer is yes. What does that really mean? I don't know that I can really tell you. You know, it's
if you can't tell me, we're in trouble.
You probably could do a better job of it. But you know, so when I was, you know, taking my year off, I was being approached by, you know, several companies to join their board, and, you know, several were blockchain companies,
right?
And they were like, "Well, you could help us." I'm going, "I don't know how I can help you with this," but you know, it's something that, you know, every large company is getting more involved with. Every small company in the tech world is starting to try to find more ways to, you know, to utilize it and to sell it. And then it's going to then infiltrate, you know, companies of every size. Tremendous power and opportunity. I'm not the person to be able to explain that to
you. So, John, you're the guy?
Well, I'll do my best.
Well, first, explain maybe blockchain kind of conceptually, and then explain how that's different than the cryptocurrency, where a lot of people get confused that they're one and the same.
You know, agreed. We have and work with a company, and we're educating ourselves on it. So to answer your first question, no, we don't dabble, as you mentioned, in blockchain or crypto at this point. But it's something that we see in the future that we've got to engage in. In doing so, we've worked with a local company here in Alpharetta, Georgia, called Turnio. And they are educating us not only on, you know, the process and the investment and the banks that are involved, because there are different lending institutions that get involved in blockchain and cryptocurrency. So, and it's, you know, at this point, I think the biggest challenge they have is converting blockchain and cryptocurrency to cash, right, or to onto a card. And that's in essence where we see an opportunity for us on the virtual card issuing card that we can one of the things we can do is settle that that blockchain amount onto a card, a virtual card or a credit card. So then a debit card, right? So then there's access to it. And that's one area, again, where we think there's opportunity. And again, we're just in the initial stages of better educating ourselves
right.
on where
it's it's relatively new, and I think there's still a debate that is crypto, is that a currency or is it a commodity? Like what? They don't even know what it is, right? There is an agreement on that.
Yeah, and Lee, as you know, and you know, crypto uses blockchain, but blockchain and crypto are two
separate
totally
things,
separate things.
Right.
All right. So there's so much more potential to utilize blockchain, you know, throughout the entire.
In terms of the transparency
that's right.
and the ledger and all
that's
that.
That's right.
I also would just add to what Brian just said that there's reporting capabilities mm-hmm. among blockchain and cryptocurrency that could be helpful for companies.
Yeah. I do have somebody here in town that's an expert in blockchain. He's a lawyer, and I won't put his name on the. On the mm-hmm. air before we talk to him, but if it's somebody I can put you in contact with,
a lot of firms are touching blockchain, especially here in Atlanta, because of all the fintech stuff
right.
that's happening, and there's blockchain adjacent opportunities. I think a lot of people are pursuing or at least learning more about,
mm-hmm.
and so it's an exciting time. It's changing, and you have to you can't ignore it because it's coming way or another. Right,
that's right.
We would agree.
And so what's next for you guys? How do you see this relationship evolving?
Well, as you were talking before we came on the air, we're all hiring. Everybody who's sitting at the table, we're all hiring. And we're actively hiring, and we're actively trying to bring on more new clients. And as we bring on more new clients, we need to fully engage on the payment side, our partners, and our other ways to help our clients become more efficient in their payments process.
So now... what's it like to work at Priority? You said it was a millennial friendly. What does that mean? Like there's kombucha or a kegerator? What does that mean?
I haven't seen either. But I just think when you look at the workforce, and we talked about college graduates and or recent college grads, they're looking for what they consider a fun place to work. They want to look at different work hours, different vacation opportunities or time off, paid time off opportunities. And so we've expanded from what was traditional to, I'll put it in this context. I was told don't tell the developers that they got to be in by 9 a.m. in the morning, and don't tell them they got to leave by 9 p.m. at night. And they'll figure out the rest in terms of 2-week sprints and IT work that needs to get done. So I think that's a big part of it is being a friendly environment. We're very close to our employees. Priority recently did a public offering in July, and we came out with a stock option plan for all of our employees. So we're all owners, which was important to us. But along those lines, I would tell you that we recognize the importance of our employee base and try to do as much as we can with them, whether it's Braves games or outside the building, recognize them in Circle of Excellence events, which will take place for us next month up at Lake Lanier. We'll take our top employees there. So constantly trying to stay close to them and recognize and reward them for their efforts.
And then what type of what area are you hiring right now? Just technology?
I think we're all hiring for technology.
Yeah.
That's a challenge right now for all companies. When I talk to other CEOs and C-suite executives, we have a merchant finance group that is over 125 employees strong, and that is selling a loan to a merchant. That's an American Express program that's been very successful for us, and we're constantly hiring for those positions as well. So across the board, really.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way coordinates for you guys?
Definitely the website has a significant amount of information on there, and they certainly can call into the facility with respect to interviews and meetings, college fairs we talked about. Chamber of Commerce, there's multiple touch points, I would say.
So what's the website?
PriorityPRTH.com.
Good stuff. And Brian, coordinates for you guys?
It's citizensbank.com and very similar. We're hiring, you know, all across the spectrum, you know, people coming out of college, you know, hiring, you know, some that have several years of experience, associate relationship managers and senior relationship managers. So, you know, best places to go on citizensbank.com.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Great. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Hang with us. A couple more guests. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, April Stamma with Newport US. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Did you learn anything there?
Yes. I'm still shocked by the 50 to 80% of people using paper.
Right. It's crazy, huh?
Fascinating.
So tell us about Newport. How are you serving folks?
Sure. So Newport is an international real estate development and investment firm. We're based in Hamburg, Germany, and we also have offices in Berlin and Zurich, Switzerland. Our principals have been eyeing the U.S. as a third currency in their portfolio for a long time, and in 2016, finally made the plunge and came over. Without knowing what their first project was going to be, they picked Atlanta as their headquarters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a friendly...
How did that conversation go?
You know, I honestly wasn't there, but it's a friendly city for foreign investment. If you think about all the European companies that have U.S. headquarters
presence,
here,
right.
You know, Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, right. Coro, Jamestown, there's several of them. And so part of me thinks it's because it's an easy nonstop flight from some of the major cities, but it's also Eastern time zone. And when compared to our northern counterparts, it's a little more affordable. So they picked Atlanta, and they were connected with our president of the U.S. office, Jake Naraki. And Jake's earlier career was at Jamestown. He studied under the Michael Phillips over there.
And Jamestown is the developers for Chelsea Market, for Pond City Market.
West Side Urban Market, exactly. And he worked under their acquisitions team. Mm-hmm. And in that phase of his career, he developed a really distinct perspective on urban core assemblage and was really itching to figure out how to do that here in his hometown. He's a native.
So you're a native as well?
Yes, I am.
So you, and your project you're working on is in the downtown area?
It is. So Jake took our two European principals all over the city, really, to explore what was here. But took them to South Downtown, which we quantify as just south of the Five Points MARTA station, east of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, west of the Capitol Building, and north of 20. So that, you know, 12-block area. And walked him around that area. He thought it was going to be his last interview. You know, if you've walked on there recently, you'll understand why.
So where does Underground fit into that?
Underground is adjacent to us on the northeast side.
So it's not part of this project?
Not part of ours. But we, you know, it's very important that Underground also succeeds because it's a neighbor. And, you know, to be honest, these two European principals walked around and they were just kind of baffled at what they were seeing. It was... You know, from their perspective, there are these amazing, historic, beautiful buildings that all had boarded up windows and were empty. And they saw a $2.6 billion stadium being built. And
all around it, there's stuff.
Our Capitol building and our largest MARTA station just to our north. And so really their question wasn't, you know, anything but when can we get started and how much do you
So they see this as an opportunity.
Huge opportunity. And Jake did too. I mean, he just felt like this area of the city is kind of Atlanta's last chance at getting it right. Mm-hmm. When you think about developers traditionally, they don't take a lot of, you know, pride in renovating buildings. They take more pride in tearing them down and building new,
shiny ones, right?
Yes. And so we just felt like there was an amazing opportunity to preserve a lot of the history of where Atlanta started and make this a thriving neighborhood in the middle of the city.
So what's the vision? So you have kind of the bones of these beautiful buildings that have been around for hundred plus years, right?
That's exactly right.
And if you just kind of walk the streets during the daytime, you're like, this is a ton of opportunity.
Yes.
And it's exciting.
It is.
And exciting. Then, you know, the Cinderella, you know, the alarm goes off at even it's probably 6 o'clock and it's a different world.
Yes. And, you know, I think there's a couple of things happening down there. There isn't a lot of activity. I mean, there is certainly a very passionate community that loves South Downtown, has lived there and worked there for years. But I would say 80% of our buildings that we purchased are empty. And that's a big percentage. And so we're not kicking people out. We're just inviting more people into the story. And that's what it needs. I mean, a thriving neighborhood can't survive unless it has people living there, working there.
Right. It's a chicken and egg thing, right? Like, so you need the density of the people.
Yes.
And then you need the stuff to do, or people aren't going to go there. So somebody's got to go first.
Someone's got to go first. And the good news is, you know, we bought 48 buildings. So it's about 800,000 square feet of existing property, mostly historical buildings. And we have about 4 acres of parking lots. So it's about 1,000 parking spots. So we feel that our near-term opportunity is in redeveloping those buildings, the historic buildings, and bringing people back into them. And then over time, as the market demands, those parking lots, which will be great for temporary parking solutions, will also be wonderful as future development sites, bringing more residential and mixed use to the neighborhood.
And you're doing something kind of innovative in that area called Pop-Up Row. Talk about that a little bit.
We are. We're really excited about this. So as we've defined our phasing, which has been a long process, but we have decided that the area closest to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's a one-block area on Mitchell Street, and it includes historic Hotel Row, and then across the street, 222 Mitchell Street.
And then explain why that's historic Hotel Row.
Yes. Well, they were historic hotels.
Right.
So the Gordon Hotel, the Scoville Hotel, the Sylvan Hotel are all hotels that were developed and built in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that served the original train station in the heart of the city, Terminal Train Station. No longer there. It's a federal building, which is beautiful. But those hotels are still remain intact. And they are predominantly set up as retail on the street level. And then the upper floors are residential and creative office. So we own 5 of those buildings on historic Hotel Row. And as we've defined that will be our phase one of construction, which will start in early fall, we found ourselves also with 8 empty retail bays, mm-hmm. and they're great. I mean, they're about 750 mm-hmm. to 1,500 square feet. They're street fronting, you know, a 6-minute walk to Mercedes-Benz doors. And we just felt like we had a huge opportunity to fill that, you know, in this interim time period. So we put a call out to the city of Atlanta, creatives, makers,
artists,
and just said, you know, tell us what you got. We're going to give you 4 months, free rent, utilities, like your risk is your time. And we want to see the best of what Atlanta has to offer and give people a little bit of a signal of what this area will be in the future. So we were overwhelmed. I told the team at the beginning, I want 100 applications, good applications. Mm-hmm. We received over 120 and had to cut it off early. So the response was amazing. And we have identified 8 folks that are going in and launching on Thursday.
And then these are they artists? Like who ended up, who were the 8? Can you talk?
Absolutely. So it's a wide variety. And thankfully we had a selection committee. So 2 Newport team members, but 7 external people.
Right.
That all represented audiences that are really important to us, a Georgia State student, an avid Atlanta United fan, a City of Atlanta employee, a resident. So a good
But they had access to this. They could build what they thought was viable for that 4 months or longer period of time, right?
4 months is what we can guarantee. Yeah. And then we'll see what happens after.
And then, so are they nonprofit, for-profit, or is it a combination?
It's a combination. We definitely have Georgia State, one of their professors in the College of Arts has helped curate an art gallery. So it'll be a mixture of different art practices. Photography is included in there, but that will be one of the spaces. We have a bookstore that actually it was one of the highest rated of anything from our selection committee of anything else. But they have a current location in Mableton called the Bookhouse, and they'll be coming down as the Bookery. But they do author readings and book club meetups. You mentioned kombucha. We have a beverage company called Key Beverages. These 2 young Georgia Tech grads who want to offer, kombucha and cold brew coffee at a more affordable price because they feel like it's right now kind of this niche that only a certain demographic can afford it. So they've reinvented the model. They serve it out of kegs. So they're actually going to be bottling and selling in one of our spaces. So wide variety, a clothing boutique, a maker studio. We're just really excited for the variety.
And then part of that is to invest back in the community that you're kind of working with. And the vision of this isn't to be kind of this highly gentrification little area for the super wealthy to live eventually downtown, right? This is kind of a, you're trying to make this more accessible for everybody.
That's exactly right. We keep saying our mantra is like, this is a neighborhood for all Atlantans. You know, the history of this area has seen many audiences over the course of the last 100+ years. And we want to invite all of those audiences back.
And those historic hotels, the history, I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that that was the bus or train area that was primarily African-American, that they couldn't go to hotels, and that this was more African-American-oriented hotels that were serving that community?
Over time. So certainly when the train station was first built, I think that it served everybody, very Caucasian-influenced. But then over time, you know, if you think about the 20s, 30s, 40s, it certainly started developing into more of that African-American culture.
And then so you're trying to keep some of that culture and the neighborhood of the people who live around there right now kind of engaged in the community and not kind of priced out of it.
That's right. You know, if you think about downtown as compared to its surrounding neighborhoods, Midtown, Inman Park, it's affordable by nature. I mean, the buildings themselves and how we purchase them make it easy for us to offer them at affordable rates as compared to our counterparts. So we expect that to hold true for a long time. And the, you know, our investment group, the fortunate thing about the European investors that we have is that they're patient with their money. So we're not
is kind of a, they have a longer timeline than maybe
holding. Yes. We're going to be investors down here for a really long time, and there's no ribbon cutting and inviting people in all at once. We're growing it over time.
Organically kind of letting it kind of brew.
Yeah. We feel like that's important. Real cities don't get built
overnight. Right. And then, so how exciting is this for you in your career?
Oh, I mean, it's one of my most proud moments. I say that now, let's see how Thursday goes. But yes, I'm thrilled. I mean, the team has just been so supportive from the moment that we broached this idea. We've worked tirelessly to make it happen in such a short period of time. And the city of Atlanta has been a great partner of ours in helping push this through quickly. And certainly, you know, we hope that everyone joins us on Thursday for that kickoff event.
And then so at that event, will those 8 pop-up places actually that are open for business?
Open for business. It'll be the first time that all 8 are open. We'll have food trucks down there, music, some other special surprises. So yeah, we just invite everyone from around the area to come down and join. I mean, we're in between 2 MARTA stations, so MARTA is a really easy way to get to us. But there's also ample parking in downtown. I know there's perception that it's hard to find parking, but we've got a lot of parking spaces surrounding us.
And then the hours of operations for these events, are they going to be primarily during the daytime business hours, or is this going to, are you trying to kind of slowly expand that kind of window of time?
Our goal is to slowly expand, but we are committed to Monday through Friday. Majority of the spaces will be open from 10 to 8. Mm-hmm. So trying to bleed in a little bit over the normal business day. And then Saturdays from 10 to 6. So trying to encourage some weekend traffic. And every individual pop-up tenant, they will be doing their own events and encouraging people to come down at different times. And so what we're excited about is the collaboration between all of the tenants. You know, the bookstore sending people over to get kombucha before they come to the signing. So,
and then, so what are you doing to foster that community?
We are
just getting out of the way, just inviting them all in there and say, hey, we're on this together.
Yes, we're inviting them in. We had the all 8 tenants together for the first time last week.
And some of them know each other. Some of them are first time meeting, right?
Most first time meeting.
Wow.
And so the energy, it lasted for, you know, an hour longer than we thought because they just continued to talk and try up ideas. And so our team is planning to help foster that as much as possible. We also have a marketing center on that historic hotel row. So we're literally in the middle of them all. And we plan to continue to just bring them together and be that conduit for communication and event ideas and just helping make sure they're all communicating well.
Good stuff. This is an exciting time, and it's an important venture that you're investing in our city like this, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
And if somebody went to go and check that out, what's the coordinates for that? Is there a website for that development right now or just your company?
Southdowntown.com is where you can find us. You can either spell it out or it's DWNTN. They both go to the same place.
Because vowels are so old people, right?
I know.
Consonants only. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and best of luck.
Thank you.
And if there's anything, please keep us involved. We'd like to, you know, do what we can to help get the word out and help tell the stories because it's so important to kind of revitalize that area.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Hang with us. One more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, Holly Stewart, the owner of Two Men in a Truck in which one? Smyrna, Ackworth, all of them?
Yeah, we're in Smyrna and Ackworth.
So tell us about Two Men in the Truck and how'd you get involved with them?
Yeah, sure. Well, Two Men in a Truck is the largest franchise moving company actually in the world. And we're the largest mover here in Georgia. So we've got 10 franchises all throughout the metro area, which I think actually equates maybe about 17 offices. So we can definitely serve the entire city. I actually got involved in Two Men in a Truck. I was in market research before, kind of in corporate America.
So it was a logical next step.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Everyone dreams of being a mover, right? So it's time to step up. No, actually, I was going to go back and get my master's and decided I shouldn't just spoil all my savings and go get a job. So I went and applied for a frontline customer service representative position. Timing worked out, and I got a GM job. Worked my way up through a couple different franchises throughout the city. Actually started in Decatur, went over to Tucker.
So you were with the organization Two Men in a Truck?
Well,
or you were working other franchises?
Yeah, I was actually with a multi-unit franchisee.
Okay.
Yep. So all throughout the city, then headed up his Atlanta department. He actually lives in Tennessee. So I ran 10 offices for him for a number of years until I got to a spot where I could buy him out of a couple of them. So
that was your first kind of glimpse into the organization?
That was my first glimpse into the organization, the industry, everything. Brand spanking new, but...
So that was a great way to learn, though. It was on his dime. You were getting paid to learn, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it was the best... he always jokes that I got a PhD, you know, in moving down in that first year or two in the inner city. But yeah, it was a great way to learn. I learned all aspects of business. That's the kind of the beauty of small business is that you really, yeah, sure, we've got the movers. That's the obvious, right? The movers and the packers and the people who answer the phones, but you've got the accounting and the marketing, the HR, the compliance, just all aspects.
Now, what was it like that first day when you were, it was now yours and you weren't working for that guy anymore and this is all your problem now?
You know, I get that question a lot, and most people ask, you know, oh my gosh, wasn't it so much more stressful? And it really wasn't, and it was because I went from 10 offices down to 2.
So it was easier.
It really was, and I had the luxury of him letting me kind of run it like I owned it, so I sort of still felt that same sense of risk and liability before. But yeah, I mean, it's different. We're a very seasonal business. And so that first January and February when it was my own dime and we were really slow, there was that moment of panic where I thought, oh my goodness, what have I done? But then picks up, most homes hit the market in February. So shortly after that late February moment of panic comes March and we start to see the sun come out and people start shopping and then the moving starts picking up.
So then primarily it's people moving home to home or into an apartment or how do people use your service?
Yeah. So we do residential and commercial. 80% of our business does come from residential, whether that's single family homes or apartments. It depends sort of where in the city we are. Down in the city, we obviously see more apartment moving. When we get out further in the suburbs, we have the homes, but there's definitely a mix throughout.
And it's usually local to local, like, you know, Smyrna to Dunwoody. It's not like, you know, New York to Atlanta.
Well, we actually do all of it. The bread and butter is the local residential. However, our specific franchise goes all the way up to the tip of Maine, down to the tip of Florida, all the way out to California. In good weather, in the winter, we're not accustomed to driving over the Rockies in the Wisconsin, so we pull it back a little bit. But we'll pretty much if you've got stuff to move, just call us and we'll figure it out. So
now this is now the busy time, right?
We are ramping up right now. Yep. So we just came out of March as our career move month. And we've kind of designated that our ramp-up month because we go from, well, basically 50% of our revenue is acquired in the four busy season months from May to August.
That's your Super Bowl.
Yes. I always liken it, or like going up a roller coaster, you know, or putting in systems or taking on the electronic payments and things like that, kind of putting in new processes and ramping up that hiring. And once we get to May, we just throw our hands in the air and ride it down for better or worse. And luckily it's usually.
So summer is the prime moving. That's when everybody moves, just because of the school.
School is a big driver in it, yes. Yes, absolutely.
And then so when you hire, do you hire kind of contract labor for the summer, or like what is that an employer or a contractor? What is it?
Yeah, so we hire all W-2 employees. So all come on with us. They all are hired part-time. We tell them we can't guarantee when someone's going to move or sell a home, something like that. So we can't guarantee them hours. A lot of them do come on. Sometimes we hire college students or, say, teachers or someone who is looking for some additional work during the summer. And they kind of understand. We don't try to, you know, be deceptive with them or anything. They kind of know what it is. We scale back down in the winter. So some people go and find other employment during that time. And then we have many of them that just kind of come March. They know we're hiring again and they pop back up.
Are they typically in another industry and are they school teachers that are available? Like they have summertime available, or
sometimes we have that. A lot of time they're in construction. Mm-hmm. So you see them bounce back and forth between those. Now I'm mainly just talking about, say, our frontline staff and our movers. That workforce is very transient though. So they are able to kind of pick up and go and find other employment relatively easy. However, we pick up everything, you know, as business drums up, that means we have more payroll, we have more receivables, we have more marketing opportunities, those kinds of things. So those a lot of times are college students who are able to kind of bring over, give them a summer intern, help us answer the phones or do all those added things. And they get a lot of, like you were talking about, just kind of experience hands-on, which is really valuable for them.
So now what's the ideal kind of two men in a truck employee look like for you? Like what are the, do they just have to be big and strong?
That would be wonderful. actually, the small little runners tend to handle the work a lot better. The number one thing I look for when I'm hiring is good attitude and work ethic. Moving is not easy. It takes the right mindset. You've got to get in it. They go out and they can work long hours day after day in this hot sun. So people don't hire us to have us come and complain, to come sit down at a job, anything like that. So, one of our core values is do your best and have fun. So if I can see that in somebody, with a high sense of integrity, then we can train you how to properly lift, and how to follow the 2 minute a truck moving standards.
And then, do you have to be super strong, or is this like, maybe that's kind of a myth in this, the way that things are packed and the way that, you know, you have multiple people lifting a heavier object.
Right. There's definitely a science to it. To say that you can be a weakling might be a little stretch. You have to have some muscle on you, but you don't have to be super strong. I've watched guys who they must work out, hang out, be gym rats or something, because they come in super beefed up and they cannot for the life of them pick up a piano. So you don't necessarily have to be super strong. And like I said, there's a science of it there. We have different tools and we'll train you how to work together and use your muscles appropriately.
And then, it's tricky for you as the business owner, because the people are representing you every time they go out, right? Yeah, so they have to have the right personality and know how it's customer service and hospitality job, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what our business is. We just happen to do moving, but it's all about customer service. So we build that back at the shop with culture.
So how do you train someone in Chick-fil-A, they only hire people that smile. I had a Chick-fil-A guy in here. He's like, I only hire people to smile. If they don't smile, they're not going to get the job, because I can't train them to smile.
That's pretty smart. I might borrow that. you can tell by the way that they walk in, if they're put together, how they come in, if they're polite. We are a small business, so we don't have a big holding bay for them or a big hiring center. So they're going to come in and see our business one-on-one. So if they come in and they're polite, they're friendly, sometimes we ask them, hey, will you help me with this real quick?
That's a test, right?
Yeah, to see their can-do attitude. one of my favorite interviewing questions, and I'll also go ahead and say this on the air, but it is basically, it boils down to, what is your spirit animal? Sounds really hokey, but it makes them think on the spot, and it sees how they handle something under pressure, something they weren't prepared for.
Right.
So they always, you know, if they kind of go, oh gosh, and laugh and kind of work with you, then you know, okay, we've got a friendly attitude here, a playful spirit. We can work with that.
And then what's been the most rewarding part of owning your own business?
The opportunities, really. It is amazing to be able to come in and feel like you're making a difference. Whether you're presenting that opportunity, we do over for a small business, this is a big number for us, but over $25,000 worth in charity. So we're giving that back. So being able to help the local community in that way, as well as here in the summer, we'll have over 50 employees at one office, which means throughout the Atlanta area, we probably have about 500 employees, and being able to help grow their careers. And there's a reason we don't call it Job Move Month. I mean, it really is Career Move Month, and being able to teach them skills that they can take further with them. It's always fun to have an employee that says, oh, I don't know if I can do that, and then coming back a few weeks later, giving you a high five, really excited that they were able to do it.
And then you had a career path through Two Men in a Truck. Is there a career path for the person that, like, are there these kind of, I started out as the person lifting the box, and now I have my own Two Men in a Truck stories?
You wouldn't believe how non-unique my story really is in the Two Men in a Truck world. Specifically, even thinking about here in Georgia franchisees, I can think of two or three that started as a mover in college and are franchise owners now. So that is, it is not uncommon.
What about a woman franchisee?
I'm not unique. When I started 10 years ago, we have an annual meeting conference that we go to. I was definitely not the sole woman, but I was more of the minority. Now, gosh, I don't know the actual percentage, but I'd probably say it's 40-60.
Wow.
There's a lot of opportunity. You don't have to be able there again, be strong and brawny. Right. There's opportunity for all sorts. And actually, when I started and came in as that GM, from my perspective, I started at the top, and I remember calling my mom and saying, well, there's not much else I could go besides be a franchisee, and I don't see this franchisee like ready to, you know, kick the bucket and hand right, it over to me. And you know, his kids were in the business. So I thought, well, it'll go to them. I'm as high as I could go. And lo and behold, like I said, he was swooping up other ones and made me an area director for a while, and then had this opportunity. So you just never know what's around the corner.
And so you're looking to hire right now, right?
Absolutely. We've actually, over our career move month, we went from about 30 employees to over 40 now, and we're going to go up to 50. So we kind of kicked it off. But we are hiring for our summer season to help accommodate for that volume. But like Brian said earlier in the show, we are always looking for good people. We're always hiring. Our goal is, obviously, every year we know we're going to be seasonal. There's no way I can overcome that. But our goal is always to grow it up and then have it fall down a little bit less every year, so we can continue to maintain and retain all these employees that we have.
Now, is it that kind of those parts of town, Ackworth and in Smyrna, is that where the people tend to be from, the employees, or that they can come from anywhere?
Well, that's for my franchise. So it's easier if
You're not just talking. This is about everybody, the Two Men Truck world.
Right, the whole world. like I said, if you go to twomeninatruck.com, you can see kind of where we are.
So everybody's hiring.
So yes, right. Everyone's ramping up. We're all following the same seasonal pattern. We'll probably, in the Atlanta area, bring on 150 to 200 more employees throughout this
space. Where else do you get paid to work out, right?
That's
like
funny.
A gym membership.
That's funny you say that. We actually put signs in gyms that say earn while you burn.
There you go. Gotta love it. Well, thank you so much. And once again, twomeninatruck.com, is that the best coordinate?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you for sharing your story.
Sure.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you so much, everybody, for sharing your story today. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.